Ladies and gentlemen, if we can return to the tables and resume. And as a reminder, we are now at agenda item 5. Can we have the agenda on screens, please? Thank you very much. And my colleague, Ms. Powis, will lead.
Sir, Scott Lyners for the applicant. I wonder if I might just raise one housekeeping matter before we go into this agenda item. We're going to check over the figure work that you mentioned at the outset. Can we just confirm that it was tables 8 and 9 in the annex that were brought up? Is it specifically those tables?
Yes.
Right. Right, that's fine. Yes. We just wanted to check we weren't going to start on a review of the entire document, just those tables. Thank you very much.
Figures in the... Well, I say the figures, the numbers.
The number of the business.
Okay, then. So we're moving on to item 5 now, which is the biodiversity and HRA considerations. This is really an opportunity to have a progress update following the couple of rounds of written submissions that we've now had, take stock of where we are, and to really focus on those areas where disagreement remains. Obviously, we've talked a bit about Natural England. It would have been very useful to have them here today. I think we've got a clear route for them to get comments into our examination and for people to respond to those comments. I won't dwell any more on that. I think to make the best use of the time available, we're best to focus on HRA, basically. So I'm suggesting that we'll sort of run through focusing on the areas of outstanding disagreement, sites, key species and features, and just to see where we are, seek an update, and identify any areas of ongoing work, for example, if you're happy with that. Yeah.
Scott Lyners for the applicant. Yes, ma'am, perhaps what I could do, first of all, is just give an overview with where we are with the RIA process and what happened through the RIA, first of all.
Yep.
And then I'm happy to work through an update by reference to the specific subtopics that are raised in the agenda. We have different experts here dealing with different topics, and we can go through those efficiently if that's acceptable to you. As far as the RIA is concerned, as you know, the RIA was reissued at deadline 2, and it covered the following main differences that have moved on from the first RIA. The first one was to provide further clarity on Sweetman 2, and it was a point that we'd anticipated, and the examining authority, you picked it up in the first round of written questions as well. And essentially the change that took place was that accidental pollution was screened back in rather than being relied upon to screen out likely significant effects. An accidental pollution was then taken through for assessment of any potential adverse effect on integrity, but the conclusion was that there is no adverse effect on integrity in all cases, so essentially no change to the outcome of the RIA. That's the first point. The second point, and we can come back to this later on, there was clarification of the mitigation provided for terrestrial invertebrates and the potential for impact with respect to the Thanet Coast and Sandwich Bay Ramsar has been included. Again, no adverse effect on integrity in all cases. The third point is that, obviously, as we discussed, option 2 has proposed to be removed, and so far as that involved the permanent loss of salt marsh within the SPA and the Ramsar, that required updating. Again, no effect on the conclusion of there being no adverse effect on integrity. The fourth point is that additional consideration was given to comments by the French authorities. We'll come back to that later on. And finally, there was clarification added regarding the collision risk modelling for offshore ornithology. And again, we can come back to that later. But those were the main changes that were made to the RIA. The RIA is currently with Natural England, and we can update you as best we can under the individual subtopics as to where we are with Natural England.
Okay.
Is that an adequate broad summary where we are.
Yes, thank you. Obviously, we're mindful that this was a deadline to submission. So at this stage, we haven't had the opportunity for any others to comment on this, including Natural England. But I'm wondering if it might, as a starting point, be a time to hand over to these parties on the other side of the table, just in case there's any kind of in principle responses or reactions to what you've seen in the updated RIA. We will cover the, we'll come to the more detail in a moment.
Alice Morley, Kent Wildlife Trust. We're happy to move on.
Okay. Okay. I can't see any other indications of people wishing to speak. Before we dive into any bit more detail, I've got a couple of overarching questions, if I might. The first being about, there's been a reference in the Crown Estate's recent submissions, I think that was the deadline one submissions, and confirmed by the applicant about this plan level HRA that's ongoing for the eight projects, the extension projects, basically. I'd just like to dive into that a little in terms of timings and interactions with the project level HRA that's happening for Thanet Extension. So could you just explain the timings, firstly, for that plan level HRA?
Scott Lennon for the applicant. Our current understanding is that plan level HRA is due to be produced. We've heard May, and we've seen from other correspondents to the Crown Estate something slightly later, summer being involved. So the timing isn't entirely clear, but sometime May, summertime this year. As far as the general comments are concerned on that, obviously there's nothing to prevent project-specific HRAs coming forward in advance of plan level. HRAs is a matter of principle, so the fact that it's being carried out doesn't have any in-principle implications for the HRA that is being considered on, by reference to this project. The second point I want to raise on it is this, is that we take the view that it's going to be highly unlikely that there are factors which arise in relation to that HRA which aren't going to be before the examining authority, because obviously the position that we're in is we've prepared an HRA which can be taken into account as part of the plan level one, so we anticipate the prospect of any issues arising being as being very slim. But in the event that issues do arise, even potentially after the examination is closed, and obviously if the Secretary of State wants any further submissions to be made about the relationship between the two, then that can be done. We're not sure whether that's going to happen through the timetable for this examination, given the uncertainty over over timings. But again, if we need to comment in the event of any perceived overlap between the two, then we can, but we don't envisage there'd be a high likelihood, given that our HRA can be taken into account to the extent that it's regarded as necessary for the high level plan level
and so HRA. Is that, and that is being fed in into the plan level HRA
it process. Is
okay. Obviously that we've talked about May, June, there is where we are looking at the conclusion of this examination as well. What is there, a scenario where the plan level HRA could be coming to a different conclusions than the, to those arrived at for the project HRA?
Scott Liner for the applicant. As I said, Matt, we don't see there being a likely prospect of that happening, given that the HRA that we are conducting can be fed into the work that's being carried out by the Crown Estate for the plan level. If there is any perception of a difference between the two, then as I said, we anticipate that if that comes in before the Secretary of State reaches a decision, we would make, if required at all, further submissions on that. But we don't anticipate that being a likely event at this stage, given the circumstances of where we are with our project.
Okay. Can I just ask on a slightly tangential point, but the installed capacity of the project that is being taken forward into the plan level HRA, what is that? So some of the detail I think that we've seen suggests 300 megawatts. Obviously, we are looking at a project of 340 megawatts here.
Scott Lanner for the applicant. I'm happy to deal with that by way of introduction now. I'm aware that there's another issue-specific hearing where the Crown Estate are due to appear. It may be better to leave it to any appearance that they make so we can present what we hope would be an agreed position to the examining authority.
Okay.
Just before we essentially concede that point, I think it's probably opportune to check around the room whether there was anybody sitting at the tables who wanted to put any points to us on that particular matter. And if the answer to that is no, then that's a very productive suggestion. Whereas if there are people here expecting to be able to speak on that, we might have to do it twice. Nope. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Great. Okay, then we will move on. Just another kind of bit of a housekeeping one, really, but just about RSPB involvement. Obviously, we've had a relevant rep, and that stated that there wasn't going to, that was going to be their final sort of submission into this examination. Obviously, I'm mindful there is a statement of common ground in existence that is empty on their side. I can see in some of the further work that you've been doing on orthology in particular, you note that you have shared that with RSPB. So I think really just wanted a confirmation for our benefit when it comes to starting to report some of this. Do they plan to make any further submissions to this? Are they taking an active role, basically, in the things you're sending to them?
Scott Lanners for the applicant. My understanding, I can ask Dr. Buesen to elaborate if necessary, but you'll have seen the written submissions they've made already. We don't understand that they're paying any active role at this stage, particularly in offshore ornithology matters, and we don't anticipate that they would be taking any future role. That's our understanding.
Not to put too fine a point on this, I guess our position is it would assist us substantially if the SOCG process could be followed to its natural endpoint, and therefore if they could be encouraged to conclude something a little more finished with yourselves, then
yes,
that would be good.
Scotland for the applicant, with that request, I think we can go back to RSPB, but we have, as I understand it, tried, yeah. We can go back to them again with that request or see if we can progress this further.
If at first you don't succeed, etc.
And
look, if you get no answer as a consequence of that request, we know we've asked you, but we'll endeavour not to ask you again, and we'll endeavour to work with the documents that we've got, but it would help us quite a bit.
Yes, just to be clear, Sir Scott Lanners for the applicant, we asked RSPB if either they'd be happy to defer to Natural England or sign up to the Statement of Common Ground, and we didn't receive a positive response to either to either suggestion, but we will try again.
Thank you.
It's helpful to have that update for the purposes of our reporting as well. Final overarching point then was just, you touched earlier on the updated RIA, addressing some of the points of the government of France. I just, again, while we've got the opportunity to ask, have you had any further direct correspondence with them on any of the matters raised previously? No.
Scott Lanners for the applicant. No, not on the matters raised in that document, which we come on to it later, but we didn't see anything new in the latest submission from the French government beyond what was contained in the document received, mm-hmm. I think, on the morning of the previous issue specifically.
Yeah. Okay. Lovely. Right, then I think we'll move on to look at some of the sites. We're nearing the midpoint of our examination, so really we'd just like to have a look where we still have areas of disagreement, see which any further work needs to be done, any actions that are on various parties. I'm wondering if the best place to start or sort of a framework for our discussion would actually be the Natural England Statement of Common Ground, both of them, and if we could work through the sites in that Statement of Common Ground. If you're comfortable, I was planning to do this by offshore ornithology and then basically non-ornithological matters.
We can do that, ma'am. We take, yes, that's 5A2, and offshore ornithology would be within that.
Yes.
So, okay.
Yeah. And perhaps, if possible, could we get a copy of that document up on the screen? It's REP 1-039. Appreciate Natural England are not present, but I think this is the most succinct description of where we are in terms of agreement. I think page 10 is where I was hoping we could.
Scott Lannis for the applicant. I'm just confirm, is it appendix 14 to the deadline 1 submission? Is that the document you're?
It's the statement of common ground with Natural England.
Offshore ornithology.
Offshore ornithology.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So there, but I'm looking at table 3, I think it is, starting on page 10, and where we've got their outcomes of the RIA. So if you could scroll down a little, so we've got that outcome of the RIA. So I just wondered, because this talent table goes through line by line of each of the sites, I thought it might be a useful place for us. A useful way to structure the discussion. So if you wouldn't mind then, can we run through, starting with the Outer Thames Estuary SPA, just got a couple of questions, clarification and confirmation questions as we run through that.
Yes, ma'am.
As far as we can see here, that outstanding issues really relate to red-throated diver, and it looks as though there is agreement on all other species. That's not actually explicit in this table, but can I just confirm that is the basis upon which we can work for this site?
Yes, ma'am. I mean, perhaps it would help. We have been in touch with Natural England to see if we can agree a general position statement, which probably applies across a number of the sites as far as offshore ornithology is concerned.
Okay.
And perhaps it's the easiest way of covering this compendiously, if I can put it that way. We have prepared a draft set of revisions to the version of the Statement of Common Ground that we're looking at now.
Okay.
That document was sent to Natural England on the 11th of February, and we've received some written feedback on the draft on the 15th of February, which then led to a telephone conference that day.
Okay.
With Natural England, and the result is that essentially there are two remaining issues that require further discussion before a common position is going to be reached, and what I'm telling you is a position that we understand to have been agreed with Natural England in discussions.
Okay.
And the first issue relates to the figures presented for collision risk. And we are going to produce a clarification note which will include predicted collision mortality for identified upper and lower confidence intervals. You'll recall that there was ongoing discussion about the use of site-specific data and so on, but that has now been resolved through the use of representing upper and lower confidence intervals information, and using recommended avoidance rates and nocturnal activity factors that have been asked, that Natural England have asked us to put into this further information.
Can I just check here, we're talking about Kittiwake, we're talking about collision risk, so we're talking about Flamborough and Filey
Coast
SPA.
Kittiwake and Dr. Buesen for the applicant. Kittiwake and Gannett are the two species.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, yeah.
So the object of that exercise is to provide a range of values for Natural England Examining Authority to consider. As we understand it, there's no in principle issue. It's really about how the data is going to be presented. We don't understand to be that there are any significant or outstanding concerns, but we've committed to producing this information in relation to collision risk, and that applies across the board. As far as the second issue of agreement is concerned, that there have been discussions about post-consent monitoring, and you'll be aware from previous representations that there was a request for post-consent monitoring in the form of an in-principle monitoring plan.
Yeah.
And we have agreed with Natural England that we can submit a draft in principle monitoring plan specifically for ornithology, I should say, at deadline 3. And we're in discussions with Natural England about exactly what that's going to cover as far as ornithological monitoring is concerned. But again, we don't anticipate there being any sort of in-principle objection arising from that. And really, that's the sort of broad update of where we are. We can go through the individual sites if that helps, but I hope that summarises the position.
That is useful, but yeah, we are going to have to kind of then step down a step in the staircase and actually go to specific species, specific sites and specific impacts.
But while we are on the topic of the in-principle monitoring plan, that's a helpful update. And so focusing that on purely ornithological concerns, then our Natural England, to your understanding, Natural England are happy that then that, that concern goes away. I know there was some reference to the Goodwin Sands Marine Conservation Area Zone as well.
I'll ask Mr. Leake to explain the position.
Okay. Sean Leake for the applicant. There are no proposals for other in-principle monitoring plans at this point. The project have put forward a series of detailed monitoring plans rather than principle monitoring plans. The discussion that we did have with Natural England last week, specifically around Goodwin Sands, is making explicit within the deemed marine licences the link between the geophysical survey and the biogenic reef mitigation plan and associated survey in order to address concerns about the MCZ and specifically again around where cable protection is proposed within the MCZ. They'd like to see monitoring of that, and that should be in essence ground through the geophysical survey data. So it's just pulling those two strands together, and we think the clearest place will be on the DMLs rather than another link in another plan.
So we are looking at basically a more detail in that DML condition to explain what it will contain and how it will link
to link those two things together rather than a sort of capturing principles in another document.
Okay, which we may, which will probably roll forward into our DCO issue specific hearing later in the week. Did you have something you wanted to?
No.
Okay.
I guess we just need to get down to the specifics.
Yeah.
No evasion.
Yeah, fine. Okay. All right then. So if we can then return to this look at sites that we started off on. So obviously we were talking about red-throated diver. As far as we understand it, the area of disagreement is that Natural England are comfortable that there is no adverse effect arising from the project alone on red-throated diver of the outer Thames estuary SPA, but that an adverse effect on integrity in combination with other plans and projects cannot be ruled out. I wondered if there was any update on that particular matter or whether we're still looking at a disagreement there. Okay.
So Natural England have, in the latest discussions we've had, have now agreed with us that there is no material contribution from the FANF extension.
Yes,
so that's the point that we're now at.
This is an interesting point, and I think we may even have had this discussion before in previous examinations. Essentially, what was concerning me here was that we didn't end up in a world where an in-combination effect was identified, but in and of itself was not statistically significant, and indeed was of an order of scale that was beneath the capability of the headline monitoring to resolve. And my initial response to where we were was that it felt like it was that. Now, the description, Dr. Boosen, that we've just had from you sounds as though Natural England are moving towards agreement that it is indeed that.
Yes, so Dr. Pearson with the applicant, I would hope that at deadline three, that would then be very clear. We would have a statement of common ground, and it would say that position is now agreed.
And in your submission, then, that would lead us to Natural England concluding no adverse effect on integrity for that species in relation to that site, in combination.
I can't speak for it.
No, you can't.
I can't speak for them.
But I'm just trying to get a sense of where the conversation has gone and whether you think they're conceding that point.
So our conversation, and we were talking about wordings, where they would be putting in their advice about previously consented projects. Now, quite what wording they want to use, but the conversation we had with them was that their issue arises from existing consents.
Yeah.
And clearly our position is that's not a matter for us as the applicant. If Natural England has problems with pre-existing consents, then that is their issue to take up by other routes.
Okay.
I'll explain how they could take that up.
I just need to explore that briefly, because there's a distinction between essentially an in-principle position in relation to in-combination effect arising from previously granted consents, where at EIA stage gross numbers were factored in and all of those have been modelled through. Then there's a difference between what was originally assessed within the kind of upper limit of the Rochdale envelope for those projects and what was actually finally constructed, so that you can end up with smaller projects actually physically present on the ground than were originally consented. Are we talking about something of that nature? Or alternatively, are we talking about attention to post-construction monitoring and a view that actually the outturn for the species has been more adverse than was originally suggested in the project level assessments for those other projects, and therefore the world is a darker place for the red-throated diver in combination than they had thought? Or am I not even in the right ballpark? What's their concern here?
Yeah, so Dr. is an applicant. I think we have submitted, as one of the documents we submitted, is an in-combination paper.
Yeah.
And that was carried out. We discussed it through the evidence plan process as to how we would structure and carry out that in-combination study. And what that in-combination study was to sit alongside the existing in-combination assessment in the EIA, which did, as you said, looked at EIA predictions.
Yeah.
And as you said yourself, we know that projects don't get built out as they were proposed in original EIAs several years ago. So we carried out a parallel in combination, which used a common data set for red-throated diver distribution, and it went back to each individual developer and asked to check what they had constructed, and we then modelled the constructed wind farms against red-throated diver. And that is part of the evidence base on which Natural England has a concern about existing constructed wind farms. And it also reinforced in Natural England's mind the fact that Thanet Extension was not making a material contribution.
Right.
So that paper has been submitted. It was one of the annexes to the deadline one responses.
Right.
Yeah, we've got that. To what extent do other offshore wind farms in the planning stages have any effect here in terms of looking at in combination effects? So we've got other examinations ongoing for offshore wind farms. To what extent do they affect this outcome on in combination effects?
Okay, so as Dr. Pearson, the applicant, the other hearings ongoing, which is Hornsey and
Vanguard.
Vanguard. They are outside of the sphere of potential effects on the Outer Thames Estuary SPA.
Okay, excellent.
So that's...
So they are in our in-combination study. They are affecting or potentially affecting and need to be assessed against another SPA, which is the Great Wash SPA.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that is there is a divide between the two assessments there. So we have looked at the Outer Thames SPA and the projects and the proposed projects that affect that. And that's... the status that we came with that additional submission we made on in combination.
Okay. So it sounds like deadline three, the updated statement of common ground in Natural England is going to give us, again, and hopefully a narrowing down of these areas of disagreement. Is there anything else that the applicant wants to add at this stage on that particular site and species?
So my colleague mentioned the in-principle monitoring plan.
So
the focus that as the applicant we wish to see in that in-principle monitoring plan is examining uncertainty over the assessment of displacement of resvoted diver, because Natural England have pressed us on that point. We see that because the project alone doesn't have an adverse effect on integrity, it didn't require that monitoring, which is why our position in the past has been no, but we are trying to engage positively with Natural England, understand their wishes to understand displacement effects for resvoted divers. So it is one of the topics in the in-principle monitoring plan.
In terms of providing by way of oral comment to assist Natural England outside this room, I will just flag that when they are listening to the digital record, this specifically is a matter on which we do want their response at deadline three with their best position as they see it at that time, and I would like them particularly to set out a clear conclusion at that time as to whether they view there being an adverse effect on integrity relevant to the Outer Thames estuary and the red-throated diver, or whether they are in broad agreement with yourselves that actually there is no statistically significant effect in combination.
So, yeah, that question of no material effect, what exactly that means?
That's understood, and the reasons for it understood, and we'll make sure that is covered in statement of common ground.
Thank you. I just want to turn to the other side of the table in case there is anyone wishing to contribute on this particular site and species at this stage.
Let's move on.
The next one in our, if you wouldn't mind scrolling down in the statement of common ground as well, so the next one in the list there is the Thanet Coast, that's it, and Sandwich Bay SPA. Again, you may have an update. As it stands, we have no agreement about effects. So as it stands, we have Natural England not agree that there's no adverse effect on integrity arising from the project alone or in combination. So this may have changed as a result of option two being withdrawn. I'm hoping that there's some update.
Scotland, if the applicant, yes, we think matters have moved on, not least because of option two being withdrawn. And I'll ask Dr. Buesen just to confirm that as far as the Flamborough Filey Coast SPA is concerned, we don't understand there to be any outstanding concerns subject to the presentation of the further information that we've been discussing.
If we can just focus back on Thanet Coast and Sandwich, we've got Flamborough Coast and Filey down, down in our list.
This one, I suppose, really comes about the intertidal habitats that are supporting European golden plover and ruddy turnstone as features of that Thanet Coast and Sandwich Bay SPA. So really, it comes back to that question we actually touched on earlier about the effects on the salt marsh and if removing option two enables Natural England to feel more comfortable.
Yes. Mr. Watson, is Mr. Watson able to update on intertidal?
Well, yeah, Duncan Watson for the applicant. I'm not aware that this has been formally agreed with Natural England yet, but obviously we're expecting it as part of the update of the Statement of Common Ground. And our expectation is that following the removal of option two, that they will agree that there is no adverse effect on integrity.
Okay.
And that is both in terms of the project alone and in combination?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Well, again, just as an oral flag to those not present in the room, Natural England,
we wish to see your response to that in writing by deadline 3 as well.
And for the benefit of that recording, for Natural England's benefit, we're at the bottom of page 11 now of their version 1 statement of common ground, or deadline 1 statement of common ground. Is there anything, again, from the Wildlife Trust or any others who wish to make any comments? We've already received your comments about the salt marsh. Can we take that as read? Okay. Yeah. Kent Wildlife Trust.
Alice Morley, Kent Wildlife Trust. Just that we believe that specifically with this particular development, that either method which is chosen, whether it's HDD or trenching, is likely to have some disturbance to feeding, roosting and possibly nesting birds on the site. Just want that.
And is that are you talking about permanent effects or?
It's hard to say because they haven't happened yet. There will be some temporary impacts. Mm. Hopefully there will be no permanent impacts, but of course time will tell.
Mm. Okay.
And again, I think it would be worth being very clear here that if, you know, we are going to need to take a view on the HRA position, and if your view is, well, your view is whatever your view actually is, irrespective of what Natural England end up agreeing or not with the applicant. But if what you say there means that you think that the project alone and or in combination has an adverse effect on integrity on that site, the Thanet Coast and Sandwich Bay SPA, then again, at deadline 3, it would be really useful just to see that in concrete and black and white terms, if that's what you think. Yes. And why?
Well, yes, and Sir Scott Lynas is for the applicant. It'd also be useful for that to deal with why they think the mitigation that we've proposed would not be effective, because obviously any concern that they have about the birds, we have looked at, and there's obviously the seasonal restriction applying to all construction work within intertidal habitats and at the shoreline, and prevent works taking place between October and March inclusive, and there's other matters secured through the OLIMP and the Code of Construction Practice. So if there is going to be any residual issue taken with that, we want to know why the mitigation is alleged to be ineffective.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, Vincent Ganley, Kent Wildlife Trust. Yep, I agree that steps are the way forward. There are further considerations we can take forward through the Statement of Common Ground process in respect of other elements that we've picked up through the OLIMP. There is consideration of the rebed. I could go into various aspects to talk through, and there we do have fairly serious consideration of one of the mitigation works as concerns utilisation of a crop on the stone lease site, and so we will take those forward as specific measures and specific conversations through the statement to come process.
Thank you.
Yes, so Scott Lynas for the applicant. I should confirm as well, it's another matter that arises because Natural England aren't here, but as we understand it, the OLIMP has been agreed by Natural England as well, which is obviously relevant to the points that the Wildlife Trust are making. But if they have any specific points to raise about the OLIMP, or they suggest that any further mitigation ought to be considered, then we'd like to hear about that as soon as possible.
Okay. Okay, then I think we'll move on to then the Flamborough and Filey Coast SPA. again, here, are we able to say that then we're focusing down to Kittiwake here, or it sounds like there may still be an outstanding issue on Gannet too? Is that, could you clarify, please?
Yes, yeah, so it's Dr. Buse from the applicant. I can clarify. There is a difference.
Yeah.
I think we're clear that we have agreed with Natural England and confirming deadline 3 that they have no concern about Gannet, either alone or in combination.
Okay.
But they would like to see some updated collision risk figures for those two species. And that relates not to their concerns about this project, but it relates to their input to two other hearings where everyone is in this process of trying to share agreed figures from their HRAs.
Mm-hmm.
And they would like a figure that they can suggest that the other hearings take account of from Thanet.
Okay. And is that due to the differences in the methodologies used between those different projects? Are they asking you to represent information so that they can make it comparable with the data that's going into those examinations, or is that not the case?
No, as my colleague said, they're asking for a clarification note
okay.
on the collision risk calculations because okay. they would like to see presentation of a number of different parameters in a series of tables.
Okay.
We have presented them in disparate form in various appendices, and they would like it made much easier for them to send a document to somebody else that says, here is Natural England's view on what should be the standard extension contribution in combination tables prepared by other people for other projects.
Okay. Mm.
However, mm-hmm. in terms, I mean, that will no doubt assist a number of other examining authorities. Might not assist. I mean, I'm sure that the simplification and presentation of it might assist us, but in terms of answering the specific question about project alone and or in combination effects, and that we have at the moment a question mark against Kittiwake in combination. I don't believe we had a question mark remaining against Gannett in combination. Let's just
no, we don't, but it doesn't sound like there is an
there
issue.
Is,
it's literally a matter of because the Kittiwake and Gannett data is being presented to other examinations
yeah.
that's being rerun.
And we didn't have a concern in relation to the Kittiwake in terms of the project alone.
So.
As we understood it.
Yeah, so that's Dr. Buston for therapy. So that is the case that, again, Natural England has agreed there is no concern about Kittiwake and a potential for adverse effect as a result of project alone. And then we have parallel wording, just like we have for the Red Ferret
okay.
Diver and the Outer Thames SPA, about Natural England's concern over in combination totals that there are for Kittiwake collisions that arise from past projects, but again, this wording that Natural England is, as we understand it, going to agree to accept that there is no material contribution from standard extension to those in combination totals. So that would be just like red-throated diver. We have that position.
Okay. So again, for the benefit of the poor individual officer wearing the earphones at Natural England over the next 48 hours. Again, I will emphasise for the panel that a clear written position at deadline 3 on that point is also something that we essentially do need.
If that can be wrapped into the statement of common ground, then please do so.
Yes. But if it can't be agreed, then they need to put their own position on it so that we can still see it.
So I can see then that some of the bits of work that were requested last time by Natural England are being undertaken by yourselves. They've also, in their written submissions, recommending using the Marine Scotland Science Stochastic Collision Risk Modelling Tool. Are you going there? I mean, I think I've seen submissions saying that there is no further collision risk modelling planned, but is that still the case?
So if I can defer
yeah,
to my
fine.
Colleague, Sean.
Thank you.
Sean Sweeney for the applicant. We've had ongoing discussions about the use of differing models
yeah.
and what we've sought to agree through Statement of Common Ground or the current draft of the Statement of Common Ground is that we now agree that we no longer need to provide the outputs by using the Marine Scotland Science Stochastic Model, and that the provision of data using very similar parameters or the same sets of parameters and range of the varied parameters
mm-hmm.
within our inputs provide enough outputs for
okay.
Natural England to be able to make their more precautionary approach to assessing collision risk modelling, and that was done, that will be provided in an additional collision risk modelling note
okay.
by the applicant, but it is, we did want to put on record that we have actually undertaken much of that modelling, and it was included within our original application documents within the CRM appendix to
yeah.
the offshore ornithological volume
yeah.
Of the ES chapter. So it's by which we will provide a reference to what we assessed within our environmental statement
yeah.
And also through the new parameters, giving them a range. So we hope that we will then have agreement from Natural England that we have, it confirms that there is no material contribution to any of the cumulative and in combination levels, I suppose.
That sounds very encouraging. I would like to, I hope that we, I'm just a bit unclear at the moment about the difference between no material contribution to and whether this means they can say that there is, beyond reasonable scientific doubt, no adverse effect on...
Critical.
So, I mean, for our reporting purposes, you can see why that's such an important distinction.
I, at risk of being boring on this, flag to Natural England, please set out in terms how those two relate.
We talked briefly when we were talking about red-throated diver. We talked briefly about other ongoing examinations and any contribution of those projects to in combination effects. I'm guessing it may be a different scenario here because of the geographical location of this SPA. So Hornsey 3 and Vanguard examinations are ongoing. To what extent are they factored into the in combination assessment on Kittiwake at the Flamborough and Filey Coast SPA?
So, Dr. Buesen for the applicant, so we have provided in the assessment, the HRA assessment, the revised RIA, as we would call it, a tiered approach, as it's called, and in those tierings we include Vanguard and the Hornsey projects. Obviously, we can only use the available predictions that are currently available. Those will be the latest we'll have got from their submissions to the hearings. Mm. So that's what we are able to include at the point at which obviously we prepared and submitted to yourselves the revised RIA.
Yeah.
So
we
have included their predictions as available.
Fine. Okay. I might just then turn to Wildlife Trust and any others on this side of the table who might wish to contribute on this site and species, if there's anything you'd like to add. No? Okay. Fantastic. Then I think we'll move on. If we scroll down on the document that's on the screen... So we've got a few here where I don't have any concerns or anything to talk about today. So we're talking about Northumberland Marine SPA. As far as we can see, that there's agreement on both the project alone and project in combination. Do stop me if that's not your understanding. Farne Islands SPA, same. Agreement on St Abb's Head to Fastcastle SPA, but an outstanding question about whether SNH should be consulted on, because it's a Scottish SPA, consulted on the RIA or the applicant's assessment. That's something just picked up through the submissions. I just wondered whether that action's been taken or not.
Scotland, I'm not aware that action has been undertaken. We'd take that away.
Yeah, okay.
Could we may.
As an action.
Could that be taken as a particular action on the applicant by deadline 3, please?
So the understanding is that Natural England have no concern, but they have said, because of the fact that this is a Scottish site, you may wish to seek some comfort from SNH that they are not of a different view.
And I think by kind of analogue to previous examinations, having sat through a fair few of them, my recall is that where the same issue has arisen in the past, that yes, a reference to the relevant country agency has been made in the past, so it would seem a normal thing. So if it's a view in the applicant that you oughtn't be doing it, that doesn't seem to be a view that previous applicants in the same circumstances have shared.
Okay, and then moving through, we've got Foulness SPA, we've got nothing to... no concerns outstanding there. Old Ore Estuary, similar. And the Old Ore Estuary, Ramsar. So that's both the SPA and the Ramsar. The next one, really, that we'd like to talk about would be the Thanet Coast SPA. Well, I'll come on to that because I'll finish off my questions on ornithology first. I'm pretty comfortable that we've covered most of the things that we had in our list. Unless there's anything else from any of my colleagues on ornithology.
No, I am content.
Okay. Anything from any of the parties before we move away from ornithology? Or the applicant? No?
No, thank you.
Okay. Then in that case, I think we will move on to non-ornithological matters. For this one, could we bring up Rep 1073, which is the Statement of Common Ground with Natural England on the technical topics, so everything outside of ornithology. And page 22, I think, takes us to the equivalent table 3. That's it. That's it. I think it's the second line there. So I was planning, if everyone's comfortable, that we work through a similar exercise on these sites too. First one being then Thanet Coast SAC. No questions in relation to sea caves, which does all seem to be agreed, but we seem to have an area of outstanding disagreement in relation to the reefs as a feature of that SAC. It looked like it was still under discussion in the latest version of the Statement of Common Ground. I wonder if there's any update from the applicant in this regard.
Sean Leake for the applicant. With regards to the Thanet Coast SAC, we would expect that this matter will be closed out under deadline 3, in no small part because of the cable exclusion zone and the amendments to the red line boundary, which take us outside of that SAC, certainly for cable installation.
Okay.
There is an outstanding query that we may pick up under benthic ecology, but we'll pick it up now just for completeness.
Yeah.
With regards chalk reef features out with the SAC.
Mm-hmm.
And we confirmed with them last week that the data that we have indicate that there aren't any outcropping areas of chalk within the red line boundary as characterised.
Okay.
So it hasn't. So there isn't a need to microsite at this stage.
I'm just looking at some of the. I think we'll move on from that. I was going to go into a bit more detail on the benthic, but we'll keep on going. Seeing as you're saying that it looks like we're moving towards agreement, obviously for the benefit of Natural England, absolute clarity as to where we stand on these points would be very welcome at deadline 3. I think if we move down, we are at Margate and Long Sands SAC, which I think parties are comfortable with. Sorry, before I move on, was there anything from Kent Wildlife Trust or MMO or any of the... No, okay.
There was briefly a point in, I think it was Rep 2013, Kent Wildlife Trust had a concern about anchor placements only where chalk is not known to be present, and the applicant expressing a concern that they weren't content with that. Is that a matter that becomes relevant here?
Alice Morley, Kent Wildlife Trust. Did you say that you'd undertaken further surveys to determine exactly where the chalk is?
Sean Leake for the applicant. We've got the characterisation survey data that's presented with the application. There's no further surveys that have been undertaken since then.
But you're not, just to clarify, Alice Morley, Kent Wildlife Trust, are you going to take our advice and not place the anchors on the chalk?
Fundamentally, the proposal is that the characterisation survey data hasn't identified any chalk reef. As chalk reef isn't an ephemeral feature and it will be a permanent feature, there's no need, therefore, to make a commitment not to place anchors on those chalk outcropping habitats. With regard to the cable exclusion zone, there is still the suggestion to put to have anchor handling effectively in there or other temporary effects, and that is maintained as part of the project flexibility. I suppose the important context, as Kent Wildlife Trust will obviously be aware, but for the benefit of those that aren't so closely aware, that section of the SAC coincides with the maintained dredge area for the approaches to Ramsgate Harbour. So there's this commitment not to install the cables, and with regards to cable, with regards to anchor handling, there's confidence that those anchors won't interact with chalk features because effectively it's a maintained dredge zone. So in answer to your question, the applicant doesn't feel the need to commit to not putting anchors on chalk because we haven't identified any chalk.
Alice Morley, Kent Wildlife Trust, just want to say that just because other activities are happening in a certain area shouldn't be justification for allowing more to happen. And if possible, it's possible to avoid any temporary damage to the chalk, then that would be preferable to, if it's possible to avoid that.
Can I ask Kent Wildlife Trust what you would be proposing then in order to kind of satisfy you on that? What would you be proposing the applicant does or commits to or secures?
Julia Hunt, Kent Wildlife Trust. What we suggest is that if chalk is found, that there be a commitment from the applicant that if chalk is found, it be avoided.
So that would be in the form of a DML condition?
Yes, in the form of a DML condition. Thank you.
And does any condition do that or go close to doing that at the moment?
Sean Leake for the applicant. We don't have conditions for that. We obviously have a parallel for biogenic reef mm-hmm. that is mm-hmm. ephemeral mm-hmm. and does have the potential to mm-hmm. appear mm-hmm. in pre-construction survey. Mm-hmm. And I suppose that's the important point, is that we do have a requirement for pre-construction mm-hmm. survey mm-hmm. And micro-siting around certainly biogenic reef. It seems certainly... I go back to this point about it being ephemeral and whether mm-hmm. chalk reef or chalk habitat in this sense will suddenly appear, and it seems unlikely in my view. So would there be a requirement to avoid something that is unlikely to appear? Would be my
and so my question would, thank you, would be to Kent Wildlife Trust, is there a concern with the original survey work and the findings of that the features aren't present to the extent that they could be affected by having anchor handling in that area? Okay. I think then we will move on to the Southern North Sea CSAC SCI. This is one where, according to wherever we've got to in reading written submissions, there's still no agreement from Natural England about the project, either alone or in combination. Is there any update from the applicant on this?
Yes, I'll ask Ms. Kayser to provide more detail as necessary, but in response to concerns that have been expressed, you'll have seen that a draft SIP has been submitted as part of deadline two. We are awaiting confirmation of Natural England's position on reviewing that document, which was designed to address issues that they raised relating to the Southern North Sea CSAC, and mm-hmm. that's currently under discussion.
Okay.
Following the production of the SIP.
Yeah. Okay. Was there anything from the MMO on the SIP? Because I see there was. I think we've had some comments in writing. Is there anything you'd like to reflect on, having seen that draft document now?
South of the MMO, we are currently reviewing the SIP, so I don't have any comments to make at this stage, but we can catch that for deadline three. I guess previously we just wanted to make sure that the SIP was included in the DML conditions, and that's been done. Mm-hmm. The specific wording of that, obviously, I am mindful that we have other applications going through examination at the moment, and there's also the consultation on the review of consents out, so the specific wording of the condition might evolve, but in principle we're happy that that's been included on the demarine license.
And so is it fair to say that you're looking for a basically a standard type of condition that would go into all of these applications?
Obviously, you know, we would consider that on a case-by-case basis, but in general, we're looking to be as consistent as possible and as appropriate to the particular application.
Okay. So by deadline three, are we likely, obviously the SIP doesn't really feature, in fact I don't think it features at all in this current Statements of Common Ground, so it would be useful to have, maybe bring those into Statements of Common Ground.
Sally Kayser for the applicant, sorry. Yes, we had a telephone call with Natural England last week on the 14th, I think it was, and we did discuss the reissue of the RIA and the SIP at that point.
Okay.
And there is a returning from maternity leave handover, and my understanding from that was that she has had a look at it and will continue to review it and will provide feedback for deadline three.
Okay.
again, just, you know, the usual flag for Natural England on the headphones. A response to this, please, because at the moment we have both a project alone and a project in combination reservation around adverse effect on integrity. Are those sustained by Natural England, if so, for reasons, or are they released as a consequence of satisfaction with the latest work?
And just a follow-up question for the MMO, actually, are you comfortable then with being named as an approving body on the face of those DML conditions?
Please stop it for the MMO, yeah. That's
okay. Just a side question about marine mammal construction noise effects, if I may, as well, while we're here. This, again, is likely to be something that comes, gets rolled forward into our DCO hearing later in the week, but because it has such relevance to biodiversity, Natural England have been seeking a change to the wording of condition 16.3 of the DML about basically the ability to cease piling if noise effects are deemed to be above what's been assessed in the ES. Yes. I just wondered if there was a response to that question.
I'm not the best person.
Scott Lyon, the applicant, yes. As we understood, our position is that we don't think that's necessary, because if there's any concern about the desire for piling to be ceased, that can be secured through the approval of any proposed monitoring details. So there's no need to reflect that now within the body of the DCO, but that would be worked out through the approval of the monitoring requirements in any event. So we don't see the need for a specific extra reference to that in the DCO at this stage. But again, that can be the subject of further discussion going forward.
There was a note to say that I think in one of your submissions that the MMO has that power anyway. Is that, I wanted to follow up on that. Where that power comes from?
It was a discussion last week that Sean had with Natural England that, yes, MMO, is my understanding, have existing powers. The point of the mitigation is to monitor the first four piles that go in and to ensure that the noise levels that arise are within those that are predicted by the environmental statement, and that if they are not, that there are measures to follow that. And the view of the applicant was that the MMO had existing powers to address that should it arise.
Generic powers not arising from the draft order.
Yes, as part of who they are. And
so maybe from Marine and Coastal Access Act or something. Is that something the MMO could comment on?
Lisa Selberg to the MMO. I can see it's like powers is maybe something that we can pick up at the DCO hearing.
Okay.
We are responsible for maintaining compliance. So in that regards, it's basically the purpose of the condition is to undertake the monitoring to ensure that the observed noise levels are within what was assessed in the ES. And if they are not, then I guess it's up to the MMO has the power to take enforcement action as deemed appropriate.
Okay.
That said, I think there are some other things that we can do, I guess, to ensure that the noise monitoring proposals, incorporate further mechanisms to secure that, to make sure that doesn't happen. So I guess, I don't know, I think this is probably a discussion that maybe we can have with Natural England about tying the actual noise monitoring to make sure that the mitigation is in place to make sure that if the observed noise levels were beyond what was assessed in the ES, that mitigation that was in place is still fit for purpose, and actually demonstrating that to the MMO.
With a particular attention to its fitness for purpose for HRA purposes, that it's dealing with an effect on the relevant feature tracking back to the relevant site, so that we don't end up in a world where we say there's no need to secure it because there's a generic power, but there isn't an understanding that that needs to be exercised in circumstances where, for example, Natural England were to raise a specific concern about a specific feature relevant to a specific site.
And I think that in this case, this was raised in relation to the harbour porpoise of that site, but I think it's also probably a wider ES point as well.
Yeah, it's a wider ES point. It's not just specific to the HR rate.
Okay. If there is any, we will talk about this at the DCO hearing, and if the kind of legislative background for that enforcement power you talked about could be presented, that would be helpful as well.
Yeah, that would be very, very helpful. Yeah.
Okay. We are nearly there with this. In fact, we may even be there. No, we're not. Not so lucky. One more, which is Thanet Coast and Sandwich Bay, Ramsar. According to our records, then, we still have outstanding disagreement about the project alone and Dinkton combination, but this again relates to salt marsh quality. So I'm hoping you'll give me the same answer as you gave me earlier.
Scott Lanner, the applicant. Yes, following the production of the salt marsh mitigation plan, that's under further discussion. And as we've said before, we're responding to discussions with Natural England and updating the salt marsh mitigation plan with a view to closing off that as an issue.
And that will be a deadline three document as well?
Yes.
Okay, that's good.
Just before we move on, given the relevance of the salt marsh to both National Trust and KWT interests, can I just check whether there are any observations on that last point? At the moment, suggestion of project alone and in combination, potential for adverse effect on integrity from Natural England, proposition that work in hand will indicate neither of those are remaining the case. Your observations.
Vincent Gadley, Kidd Wildlife Trust. There was previous impact on the salt marsh from a significant swathe excavated, both native and non-native salt marsh plants. There was significant damage there previously, so we're reviewing that at the moment. Okay.
Okay. Would you be in a position to put your position to us by deadline three as well? Excellent.
Thank you.
Okay. And then again, my usual flag, Natural England, please, to put on the headphones and review this matter and give us a view on your latest position in the light of progress with the applicant up to deadline three, please.
Sorry, Scott Lanners, the applicant. I think it's important to note that our understanding of Natural England's position was fundamentally concerned with option two.
Yes,
that was
if that can be reflected in the statement of common ground, we'd make sure that happens.
And this, in a way, demonstrates the kind of unhelpfulness of a lag in you know, we've got rounds upon rounds of comments and questions, and to have no Natural England today means that things get slightly, we'd be able to close a lot of these things off here and now, wouldn't we, if we had them. So anyway, we'll be able to do that by deadline three by the sounds of things, so that's good. That concludes everything I had in terms of the table up on the screen, so you can probably return to the agenda now, actually. I wondered, you mentioned that you had some update on benthic ecology. Is there anything further that you'd like to touch on today? I suppose the main area that I've still got kind of mindful that we're looking at further is post-construction benthic monitoring and some of the concerns that may or may not, I mean, we've got concerns raised by Kent Wildlife Trust and I think by Natural England too. So if there's any update today.
Yes, Sean Leake for the applicant. Much of this stems back to points that I raised earlier with regards chalk reef, but certainly, and this request from Natural England to make the link between the geophysical survey that is conditioned, pre-construction and post-construction, and the biogenic reef, again, pre- and post-construction, and to make the link between those two things explicit, which we've agreed to do. There are, as ever, many ways that you could do that. We could update the biogenic reef plan, but actually it seems kind of simpler, cleaner, just to make that link explicit within the condition, as long as we can do it in a way that's succinct and accurate. With regard to other monitoring, so we've got the geophysical survey, we've got the biogenic reef, that addresses the kind of key sensitive habitats that have been identified within the characterisations. That's Sabularia spinulosa, potentially blue mussel, although we haven't found any. The in the characterisation survey. That's not to say that it couldn't appear. Again, it's potentially an ephemeral feature. And then there's this...
Was that blue mussel you're talking about? Yes. Yeah, fine.
And then there's a question over monitoring within the Goodwin Sands MCZ that was a point of discussion with Natural England. And again, the focus is to be where cable protection is required in the MCZ. Natural England have made it clear that their preference is for cable protection not to be placed within the MCZ. We've assessed it on the basis of a worst case. But where cable protection is required in the MCZ, they've requested that we undertake ground truth geophysical monitoring. So again, that link between geophysical monitoring and drop-down video to identify the epifaunal community, the sort of what lives on it and the impacts associated with it.
So that is additional monitoring to that which you had previously proposed?
Yeah, so it's making an explicit link for monitoring with regards to cable protection. There's been a request, again, mainly about the MCZ, rather than benthic monitoring per se, but around the disposal where sound wave clearance is undertaken, there's disposal of material.
Yeah.
And there's a request to retain that material as close as is practicable to the MCZ, in essence, to retain that material within the system of the MCZ. We discussed that with Natural England on Thursday. The applicant is generally open to that within reason. Clearly, there's a practical consideration there that if you're effectively clearing a sand wave, you need to move the material sufficiently distant that you're not filling the hole that you're digging, as it were.
Yeah.
And we're just essentially between, as the applicant, and then we'll go back to Natural England and MMO as well, kind of determining how best to word that. In all likelihood, it will be with regards to the disposal sites. And the material within that, the disposal site that coincides with the MCZ.
Okay, and that would be, where would that be secured?
We have, there's a condition already for disposal to be, it's kind of draft wording at the moment because you have to name the disposal sites. We've discussed that with MMO and CFAS last week. The best way of presenting those disposal sites in order to sort of address their CFAS's technical concerns, if I can put it like that, about the sort of geometry of a disposal site. I think that may be the best place to retain wording or include wording.
Okay.
And then the other monitoring then takes us into the Saltmarsh area, which has been proposed, and Saltmarsh monitoring was submitted as a document with the application, a revised version of which has gone out at deadline 2. We've had initial feedback from Natural England again last Thursday that has requested that there is an explicit link within the monitoring to before after control impact, so kind of in a BACI study, which is no problem at all. It was kind of implicit within the monitoring plan, and to make that explicit link is fine. So we're going to update the plan in line with that request and in line with minor comments, and then, as my colleague said, we can submit that for further review with Kent Wildlife Trust as well, just to ensure that they've had sight of that and can provide comment on that for deadline 3 in line with Natural England.
Okay, thank you. I know we've talked about this in principle monitoring plan, and it sounds like you're planning to take forward that in relation to the ornithology site. I suppose I'm wondering, is there a single document that currently exists in everything that we have that sets out, that brings all the monitoring together, so everything, all the monitoring commitments, are they all in one place anywhere?
Yeah. I'm Sean Leake for the applicant. As it stands, we are seeking, because it's an extension project, we're seeking to make those monitoring plans, proposals, as detailed as possible rather than in principle. And as such, they've been outlined in the DMLs, which is the place that kind of pulls that together in particular, depending which schedule you're looking at, condition 12, and then sub-paragraphs of that identify geophys benefit.
If it helps, what we sometimes find useful, well, more than sometimes, what we do find useful when we're actually sitting down reporting on applications such as this is for there to be, for want of a better description, almost a ready reckoner, so that, you know, we can look at a single document and actually the the best way of handling this is that if it's initially framed as a draft and then maybe put in at the final deadline as the real thing, that just records the offers of mitigation and the securities. It's a simple two.
Well, because we've got your schedule of mitigation, which is an excellent starting point. It's actually the monitoring.
Monitoring. What did I say? Mitigation. Yeah. Going it's bonkers.
It's actually an equivalent kind of
schedule. It's Scotland, the same idea.
I'm.
It's nearly lunchtime.
Forgive me. Yeah. I think it's blood sugar thing.
We understood. I think the same idea. I think is what you were meaning, a schedule which identifies what we've committed to and where, that will not be a problem, of course.
I think we're not talking about that being a certified document in the sense that an IPMP would be more of a guide for us and parties to know where they're
We fundamentally then have the reassurance that we've not forgotten anything, and actually before close, interested parties can audit it and go, we know what's in.
Thinking about how it's presented, would it help if there was any kind of link made between that document and relevant entries in the schedule of mitigation, because obviously the survey might relate to other plans. It would help you to draw it all together as a ready reckoner, showing the link between the two.
Well, if you can integrate it into that existing schedule rather than have a separate one, that would be...
Very well. Thank you very much.
Or even just footnoted across. This is not about a huge, great tragedy. This is about making it as simple as it can be.
Yeah, enabling us to audit things as well as we go through. So.
Thank you.
Okay. I only have a couple of bits... hardly to cover before we... Is that okay if I do a bit on marine conservation zones?
Yes. I mean, essentially...
I've got two questions.
Yeah. And then what I was going to suggest is that we then maybe break so that we're in a position to review actions and then have the final closing. I'll say this publicly rather than just in muttered aside to Ms. Powers. We're close to the end of this agenda item, and you will note then that the following agenda items, 6... are a consequential. There are one or two matters that myself and colleagues need to discuss briefly before we address that agenda item. Then 7, confirmation of procedural decisions, and then the action list that we hope to review with you in real time before the closure of the hearing. What we were thinking we would probably do is break for lunch after it, agenda item 5, so that we can then return having reviewed all of those and then move through them quite swiftly and then have a relatively brief break of maybe 20 minutes to half an hour before we actually move to the next issue specific hearing. Does that commend itself? I mean, I'm conscious that folk on this side of the table probably don't care about the next issue specific hearing because it's not their own subject matter, they will be elsewhere. Is everybody content?
Scotland of the applicant. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Excellent.
Then we'll just quickly tie up these last few bits on that is focusing on Goodwin Sands, proposed marine conservation zone. So we've had a helpful clarification note submitted at deadline 2. Obviously, parties haven't had a formal opportunity to respond in writing on this one yet, but I just thought, as we've got Kent Wildlife Trust here, just wanted to invite you to give any comments on that clarification note.
Yes, Alice Morley from Kent Wildlife Trust. We do appreciate the publication of the clarification note, and that does address some of our concerns. The other thing that we would just like to note is regarding the Goodwin Sands is the proposed dredging for the Dover Harbour Port, that there may well be some temporal overlap and that should be taken into account. I know at present there isn't supposed to be any, but you know how these developments can go. If things get pushed back, there may well be some overlap. So we believe that they should that should be considered. And that if, you know, going back, if a full assessment had been done originally, that, you know, that would have maybe saved time in the long run just for future developments.
You've preempted my second question. So we will touch on that now. I can see there's various dates have been cited about the sort of end date of that dredging activity, which is the Dover Western Docks Revival Project, as I understand it. So the best information I seem to have is that it should be completed by September 2020. Is that everybody, is there any updates to that as far as anyone here is concerned? I know you've got, I think you had in 2019 in the Vattenfall reps.
I think your understanding accords with ours, ma'am.
So I think then it was from Kent Wildlife Trust that date, later date came. Okay, so where do those dates come from?
That was the information that we found online looking at when they're due to start their works. I believe they're due to start in September 2019 and finish in September 2020.
Okay. And Vattenfall, sorry, I think.
Ryan McManus for the applicant. So the Goodwin Sands dredging project by the Dover Harbour Board was included in the cumulative effects assessment. It was screened out because of that lack of temporal overlap. There was high confidence in that assessment because there was sufficient, there was an EIA done for the project, and the project has since been consented. So, yeah, we don't feel that there's any need to consider that project cumulatively. If there was some kind of delay, then, you know, we can only really work on the information that's best available to us, and if, you know, other projects could have delays that would mean there would be temporal overlap with the project as well outside of the Goodwin Sands dredging project.
I guess there's a potential distinction to be drawn here between other projects that are at considerably greater geographical separation and also other projects where the temporal separation is proposed to be significant, so even if there is slippage, the likelihood of convergence or overlap is relatively low, and you know, generally in these things, there is a view that such things do not then need to be drawn together for cumulative assessment. This, however, felt like it might just be infringing
just
both the geography and the time.
Well, that's it. It's leading me down. If in a scenario where there was slippage and it became a temporal overlap, what would be the spatial overlap? Are we talking about the same area? Is that contained in a plan anywhere within the application documents?
Ryan McManus for the applicant. So the Dover Harbour Board dredging site is far lower in the Goodwin Sands PMCZ, and the Thanet extension cable corridor overlaps with a small section in the northern half. For the Dover Harbour Board EIA, they did undertake a cumulative assessment, of which Thanet extension was not included. An MCZ assessment was also screened out of their EIA, and upon it being designated as a PMCZ, the MMO took it upon themselves to undertake their own assessment, for which they concluded that there would be no risk to hindering the conservation objectives of the site.
Okay. Does the MMO have anything they can add at this stage about in terms of the licensing for that project and any more certainty about dates? Particularly the end dates.
Lisa Selford for the MMO. I wasn't involved in the licensing of that project, so I don't know the exact dates, but I can take an action to look into that and see if we've got anything more detailed.
I think
that
it
we
might be.
Share.
Yeah, thank you. I think it might be useful if we do put this as an action. Just I would certainly find it helpful if we have a plan that shows, you know, in the scenario that there was a temporal overlap. You know, geographically, what are we looking at here? It sounds like there's some considerable separation, but it would be helpful to have that. Yes, from the MMO, anything that you have from the license or from the EIA from the license that would help us to understand how contained that project would be. I think that's it. Yeah. Okay. And so I think just then thank you. And returning then to the overarching question of the clarification note on the MCZ, is there anything else from the MMO or others who would like to contribute just in reaction to that document that's been submitted?
Silence.
No. Okay. Then I think I can hear tummies rumbling.
Sorry.
Sorry to be the one to stop people getting to their food. That's everything.
If it's just possible to make a note on the post-construction monitoring that I didn't get a chance to say.
Is that okay, yeah.
Just regarding fish and shellfish ecology and benthic ecology.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, you can have lunch very shortly. Just that we at present believe that there isn't enough commitments to undertake certain post-monitoring construction. We appreciate that lots of
post-construction monitoring.
I know what you
sorry, mean. What did I say?
Just say monitoring.
I'm hungry as well, yeah.
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
We do appreciate that a lot of pre-construction surveys have been conducted. We feel it's really important to have post-construction surveys conducted as well, just to make sure that any assumptions made based on those and based in the environmental statement are valid and to see if they are true. We note that Vattenfall do have good post-construction plans, monitoring plans that have been used in other applications and other developments. And so we feel that to take best practice approach would be to carry this out for the Thanet extension as well. And that for most of this application, the Thanet extension is considered as its own development. And we feel that that should be the case for post-construction monitoring as well. It's great that they're using a lot of information from the existing wind farm, but the fact remains that there are completely new structures being put in place, new types of infrastructure as well, and that needs to be assessed and monitored after construction as well, okay. To see what the impact of those are.
I mean, I will ask the applicant to come back on that point, but before I do, I think it's probably worth saying that it would assist everybody if you can be as specific as you possibly mm-hmm. can about essentially a likely wish list right. for the subject yeah. matters of that.
So what that deadline best practice, three. What that best practice might look like.
Yeah, yeah. And point two. And if there are particular best practice examples from particular other consented projects mm-hmm. that you could point up and say, we would like it done like this yeah. because, then that again, yeah. very, very helpful indeed.
Yeah. Alice Morley, Kent Wildlife Trust. We did outline that in our written representations, but certainly happy to be more specific and said that at the next
yeah.
deadline.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Are you?
I'm happy, yes.
Okay, well, before we finally then close out this agenda item, I think we need to do two things. Just check that everybody on this yeah. side of the table is content, that they've had an opportunity to speak to those items. Finally, to check with Dover District Council, who I know have been here sitting very quietly, but that we haven't excluded you unwittingly, and there weren't matters that you wished to raise on this agenda item, in which case I'll just return to the applicant to see if there are any final observations in response outstanding that the applicant wishes to make.
Scott Lanifelton, just one final point relating to post-construction monitoring. Obviously, the DCO, as it stands, already has a commitment to focused post-construction monitoring, bathymetry monitoring, as well as salt marsh, and there will be an in-principle monitoring plan in relation to offshore ornithology as well. The reason behind that is, as has been alluded to by the Wildlife Trust, is that there's already a wind farm in place and there's a lot of information that has been provided already. So the approach that's been taken by the applicant is that we focus detailed monitoring proposals that are based on where we think that monitoring is going to have value, and acting proportionately, we don't see any need to go beyond the focused approach that's taken at the moment, but we'll obviously respond to any specific points that the Wildlife Trust raise.
Okay.
Particularly about that point about any new or different technologies being used here and any implications that might have. I just suppose, emphasise that at this point we have got time and a further issue specific hearing on the 16th of April, I think it is. So it sounds like good progress is being made. We would be assisted if good progress continues to be made, and at that point we really can be focused on any outstanding matters because we've got a lot else on that agenda as well. So just to make that point.
Okay. In which case, I think now is a good point to break for lunch. What I'm going to suggest is that we come back at 2:20, which is a slightly longer than normal lunch break, but that gives us an opportunity to clearly sit down and review a draft action list, and also to consider whether those actions have picked up everything that needs to be picked up, or there are other matters that need to be dealt with orally in item six. We have already set out a framework for a procedural decision on Natural England, so I think we're reasonably clear on seven. So we feel that we don't need an enormous amount of time to close down this hearing after lunch, but I think it's fairest and best if we do it with as close as we can get to a complete action list, rather than doing it kind of roughly and extemporally now. It would probably take much longer. So 14:20 with a target by 14:40 to be concluded, and that gives us just a little breather, and then we will segue naturally into the following issue-specific hearing. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. See you after lunch.